Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Deep three from Kyrie.
And he rattles it home. Around and down it goes for Irving. It's Irving, a fire again. He's hot. Back-to-back possessions. Kyrie Irving with three-pointers. J.R. Smith for three. Moving well, and it's Smith again. And Smith. Two three-pointers made. J.R. Smith, quick release. And he drops another one. As Kevin Love answers with a three for the Cavaliers. To the corner, J.R. Smith. He's got another one. All the way across from James. J.R. Smith hits another. What a find by LeBron. In the corner, Smith gives it right back. Kyrie for three. Yes.
Good basketball.
Ball moving well right there. And Kevin Love hits. Quiet right now, though. James trying to get him on their feet again. He hits a three. Great pass. LeBron to Love. Well, that was beautiful. That was a one-handed catch and pass.
We did what we were supposed to do. We took care of home court. You know, we won two games on our home floor. Now we got to go to Detroit, which is going to be a hostile environment, and we got to play well.
You know, we have one goal, and we have one objective every single night, and that's to play our game both offensively and defensively. And, you know, when you got guys like this guy next to me and the rest of the 13 guys, that we all just believe in one thing, and it's how we can be better in the next possession.
I don't know what y'all say from that. I don't say anything from it. But a cheap shot.
Does that make you think that you're in his mind or in his head?
Definitely in his head, that's for sure.
We had stretches in the game, both in the second and the third quarter, where their runs sort of took our minds for about 3 minutes at a time, where we just stopped doing what we were supposed to do, especially on the defensive end of the floor. Made a lot of mistakes. LeBron's always a pretty good adjustment, yeah. That's really smart coaching to put LeBron on the floor.
Excited about our trade yesterday and where it's positioned us as we try to build this roster, and including as it positions us for the draft next Thursday. Wentz and Goff at this point are pretty consensus 1-2. There's some other talented quarterbacks in the draft as well. As always, there's a risk when you're drafting any quarterback, and even if you're drafting a quarterback at first or second slot in the first round. We really like the eighth slot. There's still going to be really talented players at that spot. There's a lot of depth throughout the first round this year. Yeah, I think we came into the offseason, you know, four or five goals, and a couple of them we've already accomplished. One is finding a great head coach in Hugh. The other two things was to address the quarterback position. We haven't solved that in any stretch by, you know, acquiring Griffin. With this trade, we've positioned ourselves, I think, to have, you know, a really strong nucleus of young talent.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed what they call it. Welcome back as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Yes, indeed. Studio audience is fired up today. That's good to see. 866-240-1065, the number to join us. Bob France, Jim Cushland is here as well. And we've been telling you we were going to have a little roundtable all afternoon long. And that's exactly what we're going to do, a perspective from the Pistons as they trail 0-2 to the Cavaliers now after the wipeout, 17-point blowout, really, by the Cavaliers. 23s, an NBA playoff record, tying 23s. J.R. Smith was seven of them. So we'll get a perspective on the Pistons from Jordan Ballant, who writes for and podcasts for DetroitBadBoys.com. Jordan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, not too much. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Bob.
Good to have you. Your colleague here, if you will, or your enemy, your sparring partner, is Chris Manning. FearTheSword.com, of course, SB Nation site covering the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hey, Chris, how are you, sir?
Thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
It's good to talk to you. So we got Chris, and we got Jordan, and we got Kush, and we got myself. And you know what? What the hell? Let's make it a real party. If you want to ask questions of the group, or things that we can kick around regarding this playoff series between the top-seeded Cavs and the eighth-seeded Pistons, we'll take them. Why not? 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. We'll try to put you up and on the radio. Don't forget to tweet us, too, at Sports Radio 1065 or Facebook 1065 The Ticket. All right, guys, the you know, a couple of major storylines from the game last night. The obvious one is the red-hot shooting of the Cavaliers, 23-pointers. J.R. Smith certainly went off. But, Chris, you know, watching the Cavaliers every night as you do, as you cover them for Fear the Sword, you know, J.R. Smith will be 7 for 11 one night, and he'll be 1 for 9 the next night, and maybe 1 for 8 the night after that. You take him when you can get him red-hot. You feed off him. It becomes very contagious, and other guys start to feel the confidence to hit that shot as well, and they start stroking the way they did last night. But you can't live by that. You can't live by that in Game 3, and you certainly can't live by that, you know, if you are fortunate enough to advance to the next round.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because you look at JR, and he's been, this is maybe his best year. I think he's, I haven't looked at the numbers straight up in a little bit, but it looks like he's, to me, he's having about the same level of year he had when he won Sixth Man of the Year with the Knicks. He's shooting really well, but I think with the threes, and with him specifically, I think him getting and taking as many threes and getting as many open looks as he did is just a good sign for the offense in general. I don't think they'll take and make 23s. They'll make 23s again in a game. It's just, that's a lot of threes. They're moving the ball better. They're, you know, Deli's getting open threes. Kyrie's getting open threes off the ball. LeBron's not really doing as much, just kind of pounding the ball to the top of the key and then taking a bad shot. They're getting better looks, and I think they have enough shooters on the team with JR, with Deli, with Shumpert, who's okay, with Kevin Love, with Channing Frye, who actually played last night. And they have enough guys that can get out there and just kind of shoot threes, and I think it's a good strategy for them to keep trying to pursue those type of shots.
It's interesting, though, as we look at it from the other side of things, Jordan Belon, DetroitBadBoys.com. I got to think that with LeBron James, and I thought LeBron, by the way, had a great line. I don't know if you played it, Jim, or not, or if I missed it, but LeBron said something like, these guys are marksmen or riflemen or snipers, I think was what he said, snipers. He said, these guys are snipers. That's why we got them. Me, not so much. I'm more of a tank. If I'm the Pistons, I kind of think I'd rather take my chances with these guys firing from long distance on a regular basis than if they are committed to getting the ball down inside and scoring on drives and slashes to the basket by the likes of LeBron James and Kyrie and Love posting up down low. You know, it's they hit them last night, but it's a lower percentage shot than what these guys could normally get. You agree or no?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just the team the Pistons are defensively, that's how we're going to play it. I think you want to do your best to keep LeBron from getting comfortable in the game, so try to force him to be a jump shooter. And I think you made a great point with J.R. Smith. I mean, this is a guy who has the irrational confidence that he can win you a game and lose you a game. So go ahead and let him make that decision from behind the arc. Yeah, I think it's a good strategy for the Pistons defensively. It does make it difficult when you see those small ball lineups. You know, Tyronn Lue is getting a lot of credit for game one, having Kevin Love play at the five like that's some grand revelation, but really it makes it really difficult on the Pistons defensively because it stretches the floor in such a way that we don't really have a big that can guard out on the perimeter. So it's still, even with those small ball lineups, probably the best chance for the Pistons is go ahead and take a shot and let's make things difficult on them getting into the paint.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you talk about Ty Lue getting credit for the Kevin Love move. Stan Van, apparently, and was that just sarcasm? You know him better than I do. You listen to him as you cover this team more, Jordan. But was that just sarcasm, or was that his way of just, you know, saying I'm tired of people saying I'm being outcoached? Boy, what a great coaching move! I put LeBron on the floor. Yeah, that'll work every time. Was that just sarcasm, or was that really legitimate kind of griping? I'm tired of people questioning my coaching and praising Ty Lue's.
It's probably more sarcasm. I think there's probably some truth there, you know, that just the teams with the better players, you know, tend to get the coach for the team with the better players tends to get a little more credit in playoff games like this, especially in the first round. But I think he's right, you know, and he said it jokingly, but having LeBron on the floor, that is a great way to make up for some of the trouble you saw in game one. In the game that LeBron had in game two, it makes it tough for the Pistons to make many adjustments mid-game when he's playing at the level he was in game two. So it was definitely sarcasm, and the coach, that's just kind of his personality. I mean, his post-game press conferences are just great. So I expect it was a bit of sarcasm coming from coach.
This is a little bit of our Eastern Conference first round series playoff roundtable, if you will, as we got Jordan Belon from Detroit Bad Boys and Chris Manning, Fear the Sword, joining us. Bob France, Jim Cushlin as well. Chris, Stanley Johnson was talking a lot after game one, and he was talking about how he got thrown to the ground by LeBron James and got a foul called against him, and he'd never seen anything like that. I have praised Johnson for his comments in after game one and after and really I should say after game one and then leading up to game two yesterday, because he was a 19-year-old kid who basically said, I'm not going to bow down and kiss the ring of the king. If he wants to throw me down, fine, but let's go. Be ready. I'm going to throw you down, too. You want to bang? You want to battle? It's not a small dude. He's 6'7", 240. LeBron 6'8", and 250. I like the confidence and the moxie. But now after getting your tail kicked in game two, after LeBron goes for 27 and 6 assists, and if the numbers are right, I heard this earlier today, I didn't chart it myself, but LeBron, when matched up against Stanley in this game yesterday, shot 6 for 6. So he didn't exactly slow him down at all. Now he says that he's in LeBron James' head. What do you think LeBron thinks of that? What do you think the Cavs think of this 19-year-old nobody that nobody really is, has ever heard of prior to this series because he started jabber-jawing a little bit here? What do they make, and what do you make of Stanley Johnson's comments?
Well, I really like Stanley Johnson. I think he's a rookie that gets overlooked a little bit if you look at how good this rookie class has been with Towns and Porzingis and Jokic for the Nuggets. But the fact that he says he's in LeBron's head is sort of, I think it's for him that's something he should want to believe, because it gives you some sort of mental edge. It gives you this kind of maybe edge that he doesn't get otherwise. But with LeBron, for the Cavs, you're thinking, okay, like, he's going to come hard at us. He's going to be physical, but he's not in your head. I mean, I think the only guy I've ever seen, I think, mentally on the court just kind of phase LeBron was a couple years ago when he's with the Heat when they played the Spurs. I mean, he's at the free throw line, and Kawhi Leonard checks in, and LeBron said something like, basically was like, he said F. He just, you know, he swore, he looked visibly flustered that Kawhi was coming back in the game. I've never seen any other defender actually phase LeBron like Kawhi does. Because he's just so good, and I mean, no offense to Stanley Johnson, but I don't think he's actually in LeBron James's head. LeBron is still—he's maybe not the best player in the league anymore, but he's still super dominant. He's still incredibly hard to defend, and props to Stanley Johnson for going at him so hard and defending him so hard. But I'd be very, very surprised if LeBron's actually worried about Stanley Johnson defending him.
We're talking with Chris Manning and Jordan Belland. Jordan is with DetroitBadBoys.com. Jordan, what did you think of Stanley's comments? I praised him for saying, I'm not going to be in awe of the moment. I'm not going to shy away and be scared of LeBron James. I'm going to battle. But now I just wonder if he hasn't poked the bear once too many times. He called a shoulder bump, by the way, during a timeout as they were on their way back to their benches. We played it. He called it a cheap-ass shot before claiming he is in LeBron James' head. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think that shoulder was definitely a way of LeBron saying, hey, remember who you're playing, remember your role, stay in your lane. And for Stanley Johnson, here's a 19-year-old rookie that's had a difficult kind of up-and-down rookie season, but he's a competitor. This is a kid who was great in Arizona, won 4 straight state championships in California. He's a great basketball player, and I think he really rises to the occasion. He really wants to take on the best, and I liked it. I like seeing that attitude, because I think that's something the Pistons have really lacked before Stan Van Gundy got to the organization. So to have a bit of that toughness back that you saw with the Bad Boys days and the going to work Pistons, I think it's a toughness that we need. It's an attitude that fans really connect with. So I liked it. I liked the comment. He definitely got LeBron James' attention between game one and two for the job he did defensively in the first. And it showed. Yeah, I think you're right. 6 of 6, LeBron went against Stanley in game two. LeBron just had a great game, but it's nice to see the rookie step up and try to fire up his team and not afraid of saying something to the media. I don't mind it. I liked it.
Do you think he's right? Is he in LeBron's head?
He might be in LeBron's head. I'm not sure if it's doing him any favors in being there, because now that's just someone that LeBron is going to target in games so he's on the floor. I will say that this is a way to guard LeBron James, and the rest of the Eastern Conference should take note. So if you're Kent Bazemore and the Atlanta Hawks, you can look at how Stanley Johnson defended him in Game 1 and how he got taken advantage of in Game 2 as a way of attacking LeBron James with just the way his game is currently. So I think it's probably helpful for the rest of the East to say he's in his head, and you get a look at how to defend this guy. But, again, that's not a bear you want to poke. Of all the players in that Cavs team, that's not the one you go at.
No question about it. We're talking to Jordan Belland, DetroitBadBoys.com, Chris Manning, FearTheSword.com. Jim Cushlin is here as well. You know, Chris, you said there's no way he is in LeBron's head. I kind of agree with what Jordan just said, and my own commentary last hour was this. I think he is most definitely in LeBron's head, but it's not that it's a good thing for him, because some players, when you say, you know, that a player's in their head, it means it throws them off their game. You know, they're in their head, they're thinking about it, they're mad, they're angry, and it's making them screw up because somebody is psychologically getting the better of them. I think he is in LeBron's head because you can tell it from the shoulder. You can tell it from the glare after dunks, the kind of things that are normally reserved for much bigger situations against much better opponents. He definitely doesn't like Stanley Johnson standing up to him. But the problem is, all it's doing is ticking him off and making him play better and making him play harder and refocusing him. Again, the kind of bear poke thing. Is it possible to be in somebody's head and have that kind of, as Jordan just said, kind of be to your detriment?
So, yeah, I definitely agree LeBron's, like, aware of Stanley Johnson. But it's kind of funny that there's another guy in the Pistons that LeBron sort of has this little weird rivalry with, in Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris talked and smacked LeBron earlier this year. I think when he was with the Magic is when it happened. And now every time LeBron has played him, he's just gone off and gone at guys. LeBron's kind of a weird creature because he tends to just be very, for lack of a better word, he's sort of petty at times with guys. He sort of just kind of picks, goes at certain guys and just says weird things. And it's funny that he has, now that the Cavs are playing the Pistons, has a rivalry of sorts with two guys. And but I also think you have to think of LeBron as much as he's laser-focused on the playoffs, he's more going to be focused on the long run than he is on what's going on right now. The Pistons are playing the Cavs very tough, but this series is probably not going to go super long. It just, I don't think it will. And I think if you're the Cavs and you're LeBron, he's more focused on how is he going to get ready to play the Warriors and to play the, or play the Spurs in the finals, and maybe if you face the Heat or something in the Eastern Conference Finals. He's getting ready for the point where if this makes him more laser-focused, it helps him, but I don't think he's super preoccupied with what's going on. I think it's in the moment, and I think once it passes and once it gets him to a point where he feels like it's a benefit to them for the bronze to come, I think that's kind of where he leaves it be.
Chris, is this a sweep in your mind?
I think five. I think Detroit is they're spunky. I think they play really hard. I think they probably won the next two games at home. I like their team. I think if they get another night where, like they had in game one, where they make a ton of threes, and if that happens again, and I think it can happen, I think that's a game that'll be harder for the Cavs to win the game on the road, and I just think five is probably the most likely.
Now it seems at the same time, guys, with what you just said, because I've been saying for the whole time that I think this is a five-game series, not a sweep, because the Pistons have played the Cavs very well. But in addition to obviously making more shots, we saw both ends of the extreme, especially from distance for the Pistons in these first two games. But other than that, other than the obvious making shots, what else would Detroit have to adjust and do in one of these two games to avoid that sweep?
I think if they're looking to avoid...
Jordan tackle that one first. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah. Okay, sure. So I think if they're looking to avoid the sweep, I think what you saw in the adjustment Cleveland made between Game 1 and 2 was, they made it really difficult in Game 1 for the Jackson-Drummond pick-and-roll to find any space, and it left a lot of space for shooters. I think what you have to see is a nice balance between the Pistons making those contested jump shots now that Cleveland has found a way to defend that pick-and-roll. But also, a lot of pressure is put on Andre Drummond and Reggie Jackson to be the leaders offensively. And then you look at the defensive end, we have to find a way to handle some of those shooters. And I include Kevin Love in that. I think Kevin Love has really been the difference in both games so far. That's been at the detriment of the Pistons, and it's been part of the spark of some runs that have put games out of reach for the Pistons. You look back at game one, the run at the last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter, that was really the difference in the game, and it was Kevin Love, I think, that was the real spark plug there. So the Pistons have to find a way to defend him and then just hope that someone steps up offensively like you saw the shooters did in game one. I would like it to be Tobias Harris. So far, he's had a pretty rough series. It'd be nice to see that guy get going. And Chris made a good point. There is that bit of a rivalry there with LeBron. So I would like to see Tobias step up in one of these next home games.
Same question that I asked Chris, Jordan. Is this a sweep or is this a fiver?
I think it's a five-game series. I do think we take one at home. I thought it had the chance for six, but I think we saw that chance slip away in game one.
Yeah, I think Jim said it too. I think we've all kind of said that we're giving Detroit a game. It's probably game three. I doubt they I doubt they can win a closeout game for the Cavaliers, even at home at the Palace, but I think they do win game three. I wonder if you think it's any more urgent for the Cavaliers, though, and go back to you on this, Chris, to not let it go that way, to really put everything you have into game three so that you can close this out in four, get another day's rest, finish this thing off before the, you know, getting, you know, another day of rest before the next series starts, I mean, and not have to play game six. And also just because if things are getting moderately or mildly chippy, and, you know, we're watching, and LeBron and Johnson are battling, man. There's elbows and shoulders and crazy stuff going on and bodies and throws to the ground and all this nonsense. You kind of don't want to have to put him into that situation too many times and to do it for a sixth game in the event that a stray elbow or, something else accidental happens, you know, where you end up injuring your star.
Yeah, I think for the Cavs, I think if you look at getting rest, I think you hit it on the head. It's you get out of a series as fast as possible, and you don't really limit a guy's minutes in the game. When you get to the playoffs, there's not really a reason to give cut LeBron's minutes in the game because you're worried about him being tired. The best way to get him rest is to beat the Pistons in four games or five games and hope that the other series goes a little longer so you get some rest. The physicality I don't think is going to be a huge factor because I don't think this is a series where it's necessarily like a fist fight type. It's like you're playing the grit and grind Grizzlies and Tony Allen's guarding him for six or seven games or something. He's not going to get really beat up. But I think just the fatigue of it maybe plays a factor because when it comes down to it, the Cavs are probably going to play the Warriors or the Spurs in the finals. This, how this turns out, how most people think it will. To win either one of those series, particularly against Golden State, it's going to take a LeBron effort that maybe isn't as gargantuan as it was last year, but it's close. And if he gets tired in game six, because he's had to drag through two rounds, that definitely could play a factor.
You know, when I'm looking at this, too, because this is also an interesting question from a Cavs perspective going farther into the future. It starts with, I've said, the Pistons may very well be their toughest opponent between them, Boston, and Atlanta, because the Detroit-Cleveland winner, no matter what, gets Boston-Atlanta. Then you get a Miami-Toronto. And I've been wondering, which is more beneficial, Chris, do you think? For them to finish these couple series, not just this one, but the next one or two, four or five, as quickly as possible? Or is there some benefit, especially in, say, an East Finals situation, is there some benefit for them to going a harder slog six-game type of series before they get to that NBA Finals? If you're the Cavs, which do you think would be more preferable? A couple quick series with a bunch of day off in between, or at least one series before the NBA Finals that is pretty back and forth?
Who's that for?
I would venture to guess.
Oh. No, go ahead, Chris.
I would venture to guess getting some back and forth and wouldn't be bad, but I also don't think you want it to be a seven-game back and forth. I don't think you want to have a series that necessarily is two teams battling for seven games and having the seven gaming this very tense thing. I think you still want to be in a position where you're controlling all the series, and if it goes six, it goes six, or it goes seven, but you feel in control. You don't want a fist fight of a series. But I think getting out of the first two rounds as quick as possible is probably the ideal goal. I mean, you look at playing Atlanta or Boston round two. Those are two teams I think the Cavs match up really well against, particularly Atlanta. Tristan Thompson owns Paul Millsap and Al Horford for whatever reason. And I like Ken Bazemore. He really can't hang with LeBron. And I think they can get out of those two situations. But I think if they get Miami or Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals, and we're really headed that way, they might be in for something tougher than I think they maybe expected, especially if it's Miami, I think.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about. Jim and I talked about this earlier on, and Chris and Jordan, you can both comment on this, talking about being in LeBron's head. I don't think Stanley Johnson, well, I think he is, like I said, but not in the way Stanley hopes, where it's going to throw him off his game. He's in his head only that it's ticked him off, and he just wants to embarrass him further, which is why he glares at him after every dunk. But I think if anybody is in LeBron James' head, it is the Miami Heat. And as Jim pointed out, he hasn't won back down there since he came back here last year. He has not won in South Beach. I think he goes down there and he sees his former teammates and his best friend slash brother, Dwayne Wade, and his former coach and all that stuff. I don't know why, because I think they certainly have moved on and they're ready to attack him, but he doesn't seem to be in attack mode against them as if these are still my boys. Is there some psychological deficiency that he suffers from? Which is a fancy way of saying, is Miami in his head, do you think, when he plays those guys? And, Chris, go ahead.
I'm going to say no, just because I think you look at some of the games they've played when they've been down there. There was the Christmas Day game went last year, and they're still in a funk. I think this year they're missing some guys. I don't think you've really seen a Cavs team that's gone in there and played Miami when they're like at full strength. And I think LeBron definitely went through the points of the season where he was in, she was in his own chill mode, and he really kind of was kind of taking a lot of dumb shots and just kind of waiting for things to happen. I think they would definitely be the hardest series for the Cavs because they're so well coached. They can attack the Cavs with different small ball lineups. They have two guys in Justice Winslow and Lil Deng to defend LeBron. They have Joe Johnson who actually gives them some shooting for once. And I think there probably is some weirdness with LeBron there because he is so tight with Dwayne Wade. But I think when it comes down to it, I don't think there's really a reason to doubt LeBron and him being ready to play that series. He's proven time and time again that he owns the Eastern Conference, that he's the guy who dictates everything, and that when it comes down to it, he's going to do whatever it takes for his team to win. And I don't think him playing his friends will really change that too much. It might be weird for him, but at the end of the day, I don't think that's something that actually is going to play like a huge, huge impact on the Cavs.
Jordan, can the Heat, Raptors, or anybody else stop the Cavaliers from getting that back to the finals?
Yeah, I think there are a few tough matchups for Cleveland on their way to the finals, and I don't think it's quite inevitable like so many people think. I think Atlanta in the next round could be very difficult. I know Tristan Thompson and his own Paul Millsap, like Chris has said, but I think Millsap has had a great season defensively, and I think a healthy Atlanta team could really create some problems for Cleveland and at least extend that series. And if you're Cleveland, and especially LeBron James, he's got some mileage on him now. And he really, these playoff minutes, especially with the type of basketball you play in the playoffs, it can really start to add up once you get toward the finals. So I think Atlanta will be difficult. In Miami, I think a lot of it is coaching. Credit to Coach Spoelstra, he does a great job. And you're seeing some lineups this year in Miami that are really difficult for Cleveland and for a lot of teams in the East. You've seen it so far with Charlotte. That five-wing lineup that they've thrown out at times, even for short stretches, that can be tough for Cleveland. Especially we're seeing some of the issues Cleveland have had guarding the perimeter. They're a defense that, you know, you focus on one thing and you could get beat somewhere else. And Miami has done a really nice job of putting together versatile pieces that can beat teams in a multitude of ways. And I think that could be very tough for Cleveland. I still think Cleveland makes it out of the East, but it's going to be a lot more difficult than people assume at this point. And I just wouldn't count your Eastern Conference championship before it's hatched if you're a Cleveland fan.
All right, while we're at it then, let's look at the West, even though you guys both write for SB Nation sites for Detroit and Cleveland in the East, just to look at it. You know, the Warriors are 2-0, obviously. The Rockets are a mess. I mean, I think the Warriors, the best team in the league, got what, I guess, the way the seedings are supposed to work, what they should have gotten, and that is the easiest first-round matchup because the Rockets are a mess. James Harden and Dwight Howard can't stand each other. I think they're all a bunch of individuals. But they're up 2-0 against a horrible team, one of them without Steph Curry. The Spurs have looked terrific against also an injury-decimated kind of Memphis Grizzlies team. And then Thunder, you know, kind of went Jekyll and Hyde. Kevin Durant had a legendary off night the other night in shooting. Who's coming out of the West? Is it still the Warriors? You go first, Chris, since we just talked to Jordan. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do think it's the Warriors. I just think they're unbelievable. They're pretty healthy at this point. I mean, assuming Steph ends up being okay, but I just think what they do offensively and defensively and with the small ball depth lineup and everything, I just don't see how they don't get out of it. I could see this. I think there's a pretty good chance the Spurs do, but if I had to put my money on one team, it's 100% the Warriors. I just don't see a team this year that is as just good as they are on both sides of the ball and just can do what they do. And I just look at the team. I don't want to bet against them when it comes down to it.
What do you think, Jordan? Is it just the Warriors?
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to Spurs-Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. I hope we get that gift of a playoff series because so far the first round it hasn't been that competitive. It hasn't been the best game.
Hold on a second, guys. We're getting a lot of interference from somebody's phone. It sounds like, I don't know, either somebody's breathing into it or there's a wind blowing by it, but it sounded very, very hard to hear.
Gotcha.
Jordan, well, no, there it is again. I don't know what it is. If it's yours, Jordan, then well, it's gone now. Let's see what happens here. Jordan, go ahead.
Sure. So I hope we get that Western Conference Finals of the Spurs and Warriors. And you know the Warriors right now, I think it does look like they are the better team. But I hope we get that Finals Western Conference Finals match between the two of them because that would be some great playoff basketball to see. Seven game series.
Yeah, and you know what? I think so too, and I really hope it's the Spurs. Because to be honest with you, if the Cavs can't win it, to be honest, I'd rather have to see the Spurs win and if Tim Duncan get another ring than to see the Warriors win it. I don't know why, because they're not really cocky. They're not really, you know, they're not the Cowboys or anything else, but there's something about the way the Warriors carry themselves that just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's Draymond Green's antics. Maybe it's the way Steph chews his mouthpiece. I don't know what the heck it is, but I do know that if the Cavs can't win it, I would like to see the Spurs win it. Do you guys have a preference if your team can't win the NBA championship as to who you'd like to see it? Chris?
Honestly, I'd rather see the Thunder win it if the Cavs were going to win it, just because I love Russell Westbrook and I love Kevin Durant.
It's a great answer. I'm a huge, huge Kevin Durant fan. And I mean major Kevin Durant fan, and I would love to see him get his first ring, too, if the Cavs can't win. That's a good one. Go ahead. Continue.
I don't think they're getting there, though, which is a problem. I just don't see how they get there.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's just, it's a rough thing. It's funny. By the way, it's kind of odd. I've said this many times about LeBron James, when he did his free agent run and went to Miami, and then, of course, he's ready to leave Miami, wants to come back to Cleveland. He'll always, always, no matter where he goes, if he ever moves again, it's going to stay in the East because he sees what Kevin Durant has to deal with to come out just to make the finals and have chances at rings. You've got to go through a meat grinder nobody can imagine. The likes of the Warriors, the Clippers, the Spurs, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, even though they're a little down right now, they were one of the best teams in the West last year. It is a meat grinder, whereas if he stays in the East, it's almost a coast. Almost a coast. He's been to five straight finals for a reason. And if I'm Kevin Durant, well, he's a free agent at the end of this year, I'm signing with the Knicks or the Hawks or somebody in the East so that I can get out of that meat grinder and have a much better shot of getting to the conference finals. Jordan, any thoughts on that? And then who do you like if your Pistons can't go?
Yeah, if it's not the Pistons, and this year, I think would be very difficult. I definitely did not pick the Pistons to make the finals, but sure. I would love to see the Spurs as well. I think you're right. It would be great to see Duncan, Parker, Ginobili win another. Coach Pop, you could vote the guy every year for Coach of the Year, and you would probably be correct to do that. He's done a great job again. You're right. There's something about this Warriors team. Maybe they've just been, I don't know. I hate to say they've been too good, but they're starting to get to the point that it's tough to root for them because just all their victories, they've done such a good job just blasting through this season. It would be nice to see someone stop them on their way to another repeat title. So I think that's the Spurs. They've got the best chance. And really, if it wasn't for the Warriors this year, we would be talking about how historic this season is for San Antonio with the way they've just dominated teams out West.
Yeah, I completely agree. Really, really good stuff, guys. Hey, thanks very much. We really appreciate both of you joining us for this little mini roundtable discussion. Chris Manning covers the Cavs for FearTheSword.com, which is an SB Nation site. Jordan Ballant, DetroitBadBoys.com, again, an SB Nation site. Guys, really appreciated it. Enjoy games 3 and 4. In fact, why don't we talk again early next week? Maybe we can get back together and do a postmortem on the series if it is indeed over in 4 or if we're looking to a game 5. All right?
Yeah, sounds great. Great.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate it. All right, there you go. Chris Manning, Jordan Ballant, and going to take a quick time out here so that we can get a sports center, I should say. We're going to get a sports center, that's for sure, and then we're going to try to get a few phone calls in before we're done this afternoon as well. It is the Extravaganza, 866-240-1065. If you want to get in line right now on the ticket.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.